I'm Joe Monteleone, coming out of a wormhole near you to tour the teleology of tarot for the truly curious. Ahead is a recording of a full live class on the Thoth Tarot. If you're interested, you can download the free guide of the Thoth Tarot deck at tarotmysticismacademy.com. I hope you enjoy.
Thoth Tarot. The Pleiadian space penguins are guiding this virtual transmission through the phantom show of time and space, so that we can peek at the glory that is the Thoth Tarot deck. So just a quick reminder, I'm going to be going through the Thoth deck. It's going to be a lot. This is just a fun intro. I mean, the Thoth deck is a lifelong study. If you want the guide that's going to go with this class, you can get it in the link above. There, it should be, say, like an instant reading guide, and there should be a link. While people are doing that or not doing that, I'm just going to talk a little bit about Aleister Crowley. Holy Crowley! Whoa! Okay, so does anyone have any opinions about Aleister Crowley? I've always struggled with a Thoth deck and end up giving up. This continued in Marseille classes. Okay, so Gina, I feel you, and I'm going to tell... This is why I believe the Thoth deck and the Marseille deck are difficult. So let me talk about general challenges and the shift of perspective. So when we're working with Thoth and Marseille... By the way, apparently it's pronounced Tehuti... or taught, that's the academic way to pronounce it, but I just do what I want, so I say Thoth. So when we're working with the Thoth deck, at least, we're kind of working with the energy of the cards, which take a larger esoteric real estate than a Rider-Waite-Smith. So that's what I'm going to start with before I actually go into the deck. What are the differences between RWS tradition and Thoth? Well, the biggest difference is the intention behind the deck. So Arthur Edward Waite directed the Rider-Waite-Smith deck. Pamela Coleman-Smith painted it. She's amazing. We should just call it the Smith deck because, like, she's a boss. But that deck, Crowley was ahead of his time. Oh, yeah, he totally was. So that deck was actually intended to be an exoteric tarot. So what is an exoteric tarot? It's a tarot that's kind of meant for the masses. Now, wait a minute. I'm not dissing the deck. Hold on. In Waite's book that he wrote for the deck, he kind of, like, with some level of elitism said, yeah, this is the deck for the masses, and you'll understand some of it, but you're not going to understand most of it, but here you go. That's kind of his general attitude throughout the whole book, which I personally don't love, but I also kind of like his book anyway. I mean, he's so smart. He intended the deck to be used for divination, but not for necessarily like the mystical aspects of tarot or the occult aspects of tarot or like enlightenment, that sort of thing. It doesn't mean you can't use it for that. In fact, the Rider-Waite-Smith deck is dense with so much occult symbolism, and It's own lifelong study, I believe. There's so much packed into there. But the original intent was for it to be kind of a user-friendly-ish deck for anyone to use. And that's why the pips are illustrated and there's these scenes. And it is amazing for divination. It's probably the deck I use the most for divination. The Thoth deck, on the other hand... who really knows what Crowley's intention was when he was directing Lady Freda Harris? I mean, he may or may not have been, like, on opium at the end of his life. I don't know, so who knows? But it's kind of, he's just giving it all out there. He's just like, yeah, this is the tarot. These are my experiences. These are my crazy visions of the Enochian system. This is my Thelemic ideas, and here you go. He just gives it all to you. So the intention is a little bit more geared towards mystical understanding or occult research, or and within that of the new aeon. So, real quick thing about Crowley. I'm going to get into so many like wormholes and then go into other tangents and stuff. Real quick thing. So Crowley has this whole thing about the new aeon where he pretty much discovered this stele in Egypt and formulated this whole cosmogony of these three deities. He channeled something called the Book of the Law in 1904. And supposedly, him channeling that book was to signal the new aeon. So the new aeon is the aeon of Horus. The last aeon is the aeon of Osiris. And the aeon before that is the aeon of Isis. And they all have different characteristics. But pretty much this new aeon is geared towards spirituality that you discover within yourself as opposed to going through someone else. So whereas aeon of Osiris was patriarchal culture, going to like a priest, going to someone else, aeon of Horus is like, screw that, the individual has everything, look within yourself, plus a bunch of other stuff. But The Thoth deck is his tarot, in alignment with the new Aeon, which is kind of a shifts a little thing. So anytime you see a Christian symbol in the Rider-Waite-Smith deck, you're going to see a Thelemic symbol or an alchemical symbol in Crowley's deck, for example. What else should we go into? LOL, Crowley was quite the character. Oh my God, he was. Okay, so let's talk about these Crowley cooties before we keep going forward. So I'm not going to tell you what you should think about Crowley, and I have no, on one level, I don't really have an opinion about him as a person. I do respect his work, and his work and his writings, I believe, are one of the most powerful and influential. I believe he was one of the most influential voices on modern esotericism. And you can disagree with me, but I mean, when you read his writings and you see where his ideas trailed off in different like niches of today's occultism and magic and divination, it's pretty cool. So like music, you don't have to love the musician to love the music. And I love Crowley's music. It is so crazy. Let's see what else. A couple other little disclaimers. Everything that I tell you in this little class is only in my reality tunnel, my understanding, my personal experience, and speculations. And so I believe that everything is permitted, but nothing is necessarily true. I stole that from Chaos Magic. Okay, other major differences. Okay, so differences between Thoth and Rider-Waite-Smith. So when we're looking at Rider-Waite-Smith, in my world, the Rider-Waite-Smith, because it presents these detailed scenes which are so useful, and you know, Rider-Waite-Smith obviously totally revolutionized tarot. 90% of today's decks are based off of it. I see that the Rider-Waite-Smith is kind of like giving you these examples of the energy of the different cards. So, for example, the Six of Cups. In the Rider-Waite-Smith, you see these two children, or a dwarf, or this exchange that looks pretty good, and then you see an adult, a taller person walking away, maybe with a spear. I think the spear is referenced to Mars, but that's a Joe original. He's walking away, and that scene is an illustration of the energy of the Six of Cups, which is the Lord of Pleasure, which is the occult name, the esoteric title, Lord of Pleasure. In itself is a description of the energy which is even behind that. So, what am I coming at with this? Well, I believe that the tarot cards and the Thoth deck, when you get into more esoteric tarot, you're working with these energies that have pretty large real estate. And this comes from Kabbalah. So, Kabbalah is Jewish mysticism and has an amazing history. And pretty much what happened was in Hellenism and antiquity, you have Kabbalah, Hermeticism, alchemy, and other things flirting around in this beautiful cultural melting pot, and that was great. And if you notice throughout history, we love to fetishize the past. We love to like try to figure out the ancient past and the Atlanteans and the aliens and the Pleiadian space penguins and whatever happened in this ancient past that creates what's happening now. And in the Renaissance, the biggest thing was like figuring out what was going on in ancient Greece and ancient Egypt. So a lot of like, especially in Italy, a lot of people were hired to kind of research this stuff. And so in the Renaissance, people started to bring these ideas together again: Kabbalah, Hermeticism, astrology, and now with a Christian mystical skin. The latest update, right? So everything gets continuous updates culturally, symbolically. In the late 1700s, 1800s, France started connecting Kabbalah with tarot, and then obviously the Golden Dawn in the late 1800s really connected Kabbalah and tarot with the Tree of Life and astrology and everything. And the Golden Dawn system is, from my eyes, the most influential system on today's modern tarot. I mean, we're using the Rider-Waite-Smith, which comes out of the Golden Dawn, because it comes out of Waite, who was a member of the Golden Dawn, and Pamela Coleman Smith, who was also a member, though she wasn't as high as Waite. She was totally there. Crowley cooties, LOL, I know, right? So then the Thoth deck also comes out of the Golden Dawn system, because Aleister Crowley was a member before he caused some drama with MacGregor Mathers and blah blah blah. You gotta love these occult organizations. They get together, they do all this cool shit, they do all this magic, and then they fight, and then they disagree, and then they have all this like drama. But you know, life is short. Why not? It's the divine play of time and space. So why not? Okay. So my point in ranting about all of this is that Kabbalah is, listen, some people say Kabbalah is not part of tarot. It doesn't have to be part of your tarot, but I believe if you're using the Rider-Waite-Smith system or the Thoth system, Kabbalah is a big part of it. Now, Waite's not going to tell you that because he hides stuff all the time. And when you go in an occult organization, and if you don't leave that occult organization or whatever, you know, you're not supposed to release this information to the public. So I don't know how much, I know in his book he doesn't talk much about Kabbalah, but it wasn't his MO to release that. Crowley, on the other hand, he didn't give a shit. He was like, I'm going to tell everybody everything that I know. At least from my eyes. Maybe he didn't tell everyone everything. He was pretty explicit. So the Kabbalah is an amazing, just like rock bands, yep. So the Kabbalah is an amazing system. I kind of look at the Kabbalah as like the ultimate organizing system of tarot and other esoteric things that you can play with. I personally love it. It changed my life, and it really actually helped me to integrate a lot of mystical experiences that I can't explain otherwise. So that's just what I like to play with. If you do study the Thoth deck, I really don't know how you would study it without studying Kabbalah and astrology. So what are the ingredients of the Thoth deck? Let's look into this. So we have Thoth deck. So we have Golden Dawn Esoteric Tarot, which includes Kabbalah and astrology. Those are the two big things. So those are your two biggest frameworks. Crowley also adds some ideas of alchemy, and then he adds some hints at sex magic, which he discovered, which is like Tantra influenced, which is something I'm exploring now and connecting it to Golden Dawn. It's like my newest fun thing to do when I have time, which is never. So we have Kabbalah astrology, we have some sex magic Tantra stuff, and we have Thelema. So Thelema is the religion that he founded. Like I said before, when he channeled the Book of the Law in 1904, he was channeling it from Iwas, his holy guardian angel, who knows, maybe he was an alien, I don't know. And Iwas was speaking to him about it. These three entities were speaking to him through Iwas, and there's three chapters of the Book of the Law. Chapter one, so good. Some of the best stuff I ever read. Chapter two, it's all right. 4 stars. Chapter three gets weird. So just a warning. Shit gets weird in chapter three. Okay. So I'm going to start talking about specifics of this deck. The slap fights make me laugh so hard. Yeah, right? The slap fights. So when I'm looking at the Thoth deck versus the Rider-Waite-Smith or other traditions, the Thoth deck to me, it represents more generically the more complete real estate of the card. So for example, like I was saying, the Six of Cups. Six of Cups in Rider-Waite-Smith deck is, you know, maybe childhood, memories, good memories, fun stuff in the past, innocence. But the Six of Cups in Crowley's deck is just pleasure. So pleasure could be so many things. So I kind of see the Rider-Waite-Smith as giving examples of what the Thoth deck could be talking about. By the way, Thoth deck came after Rider-Waite-Smith. But rather, the Rider-Waite-Smith is like giving examples of scenes that may play with the energies of the card. And the energies of the card are what's in Book T. Book T is like the tarot manual of the Golden Dawn. I don't know if anyone knows like where that comes from. I don't know if MacGregor Mathers wrote it himself or if he was influenced by these things called cipher manuscripts, which we don't really know what they are. But let me know, because I would love to hear the tea. Anywho, nostalgia. That's what I was looking for. Exactly. Okay. So one of the challenges with the Thoth deck, and I imagine the Marseille, though I'm not well-versed in the Marseille at all, is we're working more with abstraction. So when we, like, pick a card, let's do it right now. So if I'm shuffling the card right here, let's say pick a card, and you get, like, okay, the art card. Well, art card's still abstract. It's, like, but it's not much more abstract than right. Let's see if we can get a minor card, because those are where things get a little tricky. Lust. Oh, it wants to talk about the major cards. Okay. The Wheel of Fortune. Oh, I guess I'm not supposed to talk about it. But anyway, when you draw a minor card, it's a little bit more abstract. So what you have to do is you're going to be using your intuition more. And my personal favorite way to... Well, this is what I used to do. I used to kind of... I have like a little synesthesia. So like colors and numbers have colors, and colors are day of the week, you know, weird stuff. But you can kind of like, if you feel viscerally in your body, what is the energy of number three? And you can feel viscerally in your body, what is the energy of the swords? Then you can combine those two energies, which create an interference pattern. And that interference pattern is the three of swords. and then you could kind of feel the energy of it as opposed to the idea of it. So a lot of tarot works in what's called the Yetzirah world. This was brought up by a couple of cultists. Part of this is a Joe original too. But the Yetzirah world is the world of the mind, right? So when people approach a tarot reader, most of the suffering that they're experiencing most of the time is of the mind, which is a choice. You know, suffering in that way is like optional. Pain is not. Pain is in the terms and conditions of incarnation. But suffering exists in the mind. So tarot is a great tool for that because it works on the same plane. Now, the plane above Yetzirah is something called Neshama, which is the intuition. And I believe Thoth and some, when you work with the esoteric tarot, you're working more with the Neshama, which is like a little bit weirder. It's not as, like, it's not divinatory. When you're working with divinatory, I mean, intuition is there as well, obviously. It's all connected. They're all four parts of the soul. But it's kind of like, in terms of how it's illustrated, I feel like the illustration of something like Rider Waite Smith is a little bit more towards, like, you can see a scene and make sense of it, whereas the Thoth deck is kind of a little weirder, more abstract. Does that make sense? I only used Thoth once, and it massively trolled me. Like, it just did, like, it just did there by not giving you minors. Yeah, Thoth loves to troll. Thoth loves to go deep. Okay, so, let's see if there's anything else, any other major differences? I guess that's it. So if you're gonna study the Thoth deck, I highly recommend reading the Book of Thoth. Lon Milo Duquette's book is amazing also. It's an amazing supplement. He's a brilliant. I met him once, it was so much fun. Oh my god, he's so cool. But yeah, Book of Thoth is also where you wanna go. And know that the Book of Thoth is fragmented. It's like there's the book, but it also has all these like different pieces of other parts of his writing too. So it's like, you don't have to understand it, all of it, the first time you read through it. And he references lots of things, and he goes on tangents, and take as much of it as you want. One more thing. The Thoth deck was not intended to be used as a divinatory system. Crowley has divinatory meanings at the way back of the book, but nowhere does... he doesn't really talk too much about divination. He's talking about, like, pretty much Kabbalah and mysticism and all that. Whereas Waite's book is all mostly divinatory meanings. And then he hints at some other things. That said, you can totally use the Thoth deck for divination. I use it for like 6 years as my main deck for divination. And you can totally use the Waite deck for mystical research and exploration and self-reflection. There's no limitation. All right. So I'm going to start talking about my guide. Let me see, I got how the courts are read different. Oh, the court cards. Okay, so how the court cards are read different, in my opinion. Okay, yeah, the court cards are pretty big. Not a huge difference, but quite a big difference. Oh, one thing to remember is both of these decks come from the same occult order at the end of the day, so they are very related. They're much more related than something like Marseille. But the court cards, so the idea of the court cards, I'm going to get into that in my guide. It's the sacred name. So knights are fire in the yod, but we'll get into that. And they actually do this beautiful thing, this beautiful revolving dance, which is kind of like an update of the Kabbalistic tetragrammaton, which is one of the names of God. And if you've looked into any of this weird occultism, you'll see that God has a lot of names because she is serving looks right and left. She's got a lot to do. She's got a whole universe to create and maintain and destroy. So, of course, she has a lot of names and intelligences and angels and archangels and all that stuff. So, that's another reason why I love the Thoth deck, is because you're kind of, like, working with illustrations of all these, like, intelligences in a way. Okay, so I'm going to start going through my guide. If you want to get this guide, it's free. It's on my website. Go to tarotwithjoe.com. And you can download this for free. It'll be sent to your email. Or you can hit the link above. It'll say, like, guide, and there's a little link there. You can jump into that and get the magic guide. So, let's begin. Holy Crowley, you've arrived to my Thoth Tarot instant guide. Your virtual astral journey was long. Now you'll never get a reading wrong. You're shuffling consciousness in your hands, watching Babylon and Shakti dance. You can't mess this up, so don't worry. Focus your mind on your query. So Shakti is like in Tantra is like the feminine universe, which is energy, and Babylon is kind of the equivalent in Crowley's cosmogony. So Babylon is in some ways the material universe, but in some ways the sheer joy of the universe to happen and to manifest and to experience itself. If you want to read more about Babylon, you can check out Crowley's work, or you can look at chapter 17. I think it's chapter 17 of the Apocalypse is where there's like this vision of this beast, and it's like the end of the world, and he kind of like reinterprets it as like this beautiful divine thing, which makes sense, because as you like ascend like mystically in some of these traditions, like things get weird and wonky, and what would appear to us on this end as like not fun is actually divine and beautiful on another scale. Alan Watts talks about this too sometimes. Okay, so pull a card and be sincere. If the card's a suit, then start here. So if your card is a suit, look at what suit it is. Wands are fire, business, desire, and the spirit up above. So wands are the suit of fire, just like Rider-Waite Smith, and they're talking about the what's called the Chiyah, which is part of the soul, and they're talking about the world of Atziluth, which is the archetypal world in Kabbalah. And it's fiery, it's creative, it can also be connected to like business entrepreneurial stuff. Cups are water, intuition, and love. The womb of life, spirit in our blood. So anytime Crowley in his book talks about like the Holy Grail or the Cup of Babylon or blood, wine, water, stuff like that, he's talking about the sacred feminine in its unexplainable power to create life, whether that's literally like childbirth or like larger metaphorical childbirth of the universe. Crowley wrote like a whole play for this kind of stuff, and I've never seen it. It's called The Gnostic Mass, but I hope to see it one day. So then we got the suit of swords. Swords are air, ego and mind, the spirit's intellectual signs. So the swords have to do with mind and intellect, just like Rider-Waite Smith's system, but they also have to do with like the ruach, which is our intellectual part of our soul, but also kind of like dying gods. And I don't know if I'll get time to explain this, but in the air arena of the system, we have a lot of like dying gods like Osiris and Jesus and maybe Buddha and like all these in-between entities between spirit and matter. And earth, discs are earth, matter, wealth, the spirit now reflects itself. So that's our four suits. So we're going to continue so that you can do a full reading for yourself with the Thoth deck by the end of this class, hopefully. If the suit has a number, one of 10, you will wonder how the elements are brought to us in 10 magical emanations thus. So if you have an ace, it is the root of the suit, great potential but minute. So it's like all potential energy. In the Thoth deck, and I think in the Rider-Waite Smith deck too, in the Thoth deck, the aces are not the element. They are the source of the element. They are the potential for the element, which connects them to something called Keter, which is the first sephira on the Tree of Life. All of this stuff is in Kabbalah as well. The twos, the pure exalted element itself in force, masculine energy going forth. So if you get a two, it has to do with masculine energy, force, expansion. The twos are the elements themselves. Pure, without any dilution, without any other influence. The threes, the feminine idea of the element, time, form, and development. So the threes are the feminine aspects of the element, which is the idea of form, and they're not the pure element anymore, because what happens in anything connected to number three in this deck, number three has to do with Bina, which is the sacred mother. And what does a sacred mother do? She gives birth to life. What happens when you're born in life? Well, you have a self that is separate from everything else. Separate. It's an illusion, kind of. So when that happens, this separation, you get to experience more stuff and create more collective information in the universe by being a separate unit of consciousness. That's what this is talking about in very generic terms. This is all explained in Kabbalistic philosophy and Thelemic ideas and other stuff through the tower, but that's at least my interpretation, my understanding of it. By the way, I am teaching a class soon, so there's a link up above of my next class. It's starting in a few weeks, and it's gonna jumpstart esoteric tarot. Anyone who really wants to jump into esoteric tarot, we're gonna be looking at Rider-Waite Smith and Thoth decks. So check that out. There's a link above. But let's keep going. Oh, be careful before you move forward. There's an abyss right here between the three and four. Don't fall in. Okay. So going to number four, if you pull the four, the four is the materialization, secure but safe. Don't stay too long. There's more. Make haste. So if you pull a four and a suit, that's a four. It's security, establishment of the element. So for example, like the four of swords. Swords is ego, mind, society, and number four is security and materialization. So in the four of swords, we get ideas like government or peace of mind or truce or surrender or like agreement, that kind of stuff. But you see how these are more abstract. They can kind of go in a more direction. So you kind of have to use your intuition. Fives, motion and struggle, allow for change, a difficult but necessary exchange. That's pretty self-explanatory. Nobody likes getting a five in the tarot. They suck, but they're so necessary because keeps going the motion in the ocean, sun in the sky, you know? Sixes, beauty and harmonization, the highest practical application. So why is it the highest practical app? It's the highest practical application of the suit. That's because six has to do with a sephira called Tiferet. Tiferet is like our higher self, and in some ways it's the highest sephira that we can reach from normal waking consciousness. And to go higher than that, this is all emanation theory, by the way. So what's happening is God is above in the ace, and we are below in the tens, and God or the source or whatever emanates through all the cards into the material world. So it's like a ladder. But yeah, so the idea with the sixes is from an occult standpoint, not necessarily a divinatory standpoint, but from an occult standpoint, we're looking at the highest we can get to in waking consciousness before we hit something called the Veil of Paraketh. And before we even do that, we connect with something called a holy guardian angel, which is like your higher self or your true will or your true purpose or the thing that if you do, the universe will support you. Cool. All right, so moving on to sevens. You don't have to know all this stuff to read divination-wise with the Thoth deck, but I mean, I just feel like because the Thoth deck was intended to look at all these ideas, I feel like it's important. And it's also just delicious. Okay, sevens. The sevens are the degeneration and weakness here, a frantic struggle, a vision unclear. Okay, so Crowley was a little unfair with the sevens of his deck. Crowley didn't love... Hello, Joan! Hello, everyone! Crowley did not love the sevens, and that's because I don't know if it was he was being misogynistic or whatever, but he makes the point that the sevens on the tree of life exist in not a great spot. They're low on the tree, they're kind of off the center, and so he kind of looks at them as like a weakness of the element. If you're looking at more Hebrew Kabbalah, the sevens have to do more with the self as an individual, and the eights have to do more with the self submitting to something higher than itself. But if you're looking at Western Hermetic Kabbalah, the sevens have to do with emotions and feelings, and the eights have to do with intellect and all that good stuff. Sevens have to do with emotions, feelings, and also motility, which is the ability of an individual to move itself. See, these ideas are really like, you know, I don't know, under, like, they're fundamental ideas of reality, which is why I love this stuff. Okay, so sevens are some weakness of the element. Eights are thought applied to the element. Submission, too, might be a hint, like I just explained. Nines are energy complete and fully spent, the element in the material sense. So when we get to the nines, the suits, if you have a nine suit, it's the end. The tens are not the end. The tens are the excess. The nines are the full fulfillment of the suit. So that's where it's kind of like at its ending point. The tens, nines are also have to do with subconsciousness and other stuff, but it's like the fulfillment. So the tens are overflowing in excess, too much can bring distress. So the tens are the overflowing power of the suit, and what happens at the tens, there are three magical places in the tarot where energy is fully spent and something magical happens. It's called redintegration. I don't know why they put the D in there, but Crowley put the D in there for some reason. Maybe it's an occult word, I don't know. But redintegration means energy that overflows out, and because it's reached its maximum, it signals the redintegration, which is a reintegration into itself. So if we're looking at this like the cosmos, this might be the theory of heat death. Like the cosmos is expanding so much that it expands beyond possibility, and then all heat, it's all cold. It's all like, all heat is all over the place. It's so expanded, everything's cold, and it reabsorbs itself for another big bang, right? And that kind of makes sense because those types of rhythms are within life. You know, if you feel that in your career, in your relationships, it like grows until it's done, then it dies, and then it is born again and it grows like life. So all types of rhythms of life and reality in the cosmos. Cool. So now we have all of, so now you know half the deck, right? Let's see what it has to say. Yeah, you know the meaning of the 10 numbers, and you know the meaning of the four elements. So 4 times 10 is 40 cards. That's half the Thoth deck. Let's continue. Does anyone have any questions before I keep going? All right, so we're going to keep moving forward. Oh, the court cards. Someone asked about the court cards. So here we go. If the card is of the court, notice the office they purport. Knights ride in swiftly, so sublime, moving forward all the time. They are the fathers who initiate, mutable, they go astray. So the idea here is the knights are fire of the element. Maria was explaining this so beautifully. They're the fiery aspect of whatever suit they are. So fire. So the Knight of Cups, for example, is the fiery aspect of Cups. The creative and intense and initiating aspect of Cups, which is emotions, feelings, relationships, all that good stuff. That's why Knight of Cups is a fuckboy. You can't trust him. Just kidding. We love a fuckboy. We love the Knight of Cups. Love to see it. But yeah, Knight of Cups, they come on strong. They're very romantic people. Just as an example. So knights are also the first letter of the sacred name, which is the Yod. The Yod force, which has a lot of meanings, but I can't get into it in the scope of this class. But it's the fire of the element. So the queens organize their element, intuitive development, the mothers whose secret design keep the element in the world of time. Why the world of time? Because of a connection to Binat, to Saturn, and how the idea of time is what allows for sensation and phenomena to exist. This is more Kabbalistic stuff and a little bit of Joe Originals I'm throwing in here. By the way, Kabbalah, Tarot, all this stuff, this is stuff you build in within yourself. So my Kabbalah is not going to be your Kabbalah. Obviously, my Tarot is not going to be your Tarot. It's something, it's a reflective personal practice and journey. And so this is just all of this stuff in my reality tunnel. So take whatever with a grain of salt, a grain of fairy dust, and have fun. Okay, so queens are the intuitive aspect of the element. They're on thrones. That's important. They kind of take the power of the knights and organize it in form and pattern it so that it can exist. Without the queens, the knights would just ride off into oblivion and nothing would happen. So the queens take that power and make it into something. So when that happens, when these two cards come together and do this magic of force and form, we get mind. The mind, our minds in this idea, are born from a secret union of the masculine and the feminine, force and form. And it's kind of like, you know, Cat's Cradle. You ever play Cat's Cradle with string? You take the string, you wrap it around your hands, and you pull in two directions, and you have this beautiful design. Well, the design is like our mind, and the poles are masculine, feminine, yin, yang, all that good stuff. The knights and the queens. So let's look at the princes. The princes are the dying sun, intellect applied in one. They also give a subtle nod to a famous chariot of God. So yeah, they're talking about the cherubic beasts around God, which is a whole nother thing. But they are the mind. They are the son of the knight and the queen. And I'm gonna say this, and you might want to argue. The princes in the Thoth deck are actually the kings in the Rider-Waite-Smith deck. Now, I know some people see the kings and the knights as equal. It's hard for me to accept that because a lot of the symbolism points in another direction. Like if you look at the astrological symbolism, the kings, I think, are more in alignment with the knight, with the princes here. And, you know, Waite did some weird things with those court cards. That's another reason why I like the Thoth deck, is because it's clear. But I mean, if your knight's a king, that's fine. But my knight is a knight. And to me, they both represent fire as well as the mutable signs of the zodiac and as well as the first name of the Tetragrammaton. The only thing you really need to know about the court cards, if you really want, Joe, when you are writing your book, it needs to be done. When are you writing your book? It needs to be done. I hope, you know, that's really the next goal. I've been so busy and like just doing so much stuff, but I really need to carve out some time because hopefully soon I would love to. As long as you have your tetragrammaton straight and your elements straight and you know which court cards are what elements and what letters of the tetragrammaton are, if you use it, as long as you know, you're good. Just keep it consistent. There's another hint that this is, I haven't seen this written anywhere, but I'm starting to notice a hint and it exists in McGregor's Mather's secret deck, which I believe the Hermetic Tarot, which apparently is secretly made by, or the original designs were by McGregor Mathers, who started all this stuff, kind of. He kind of makes the King of Cups switch offices with the Knight of Cups. It's really weird. And I don't know if that has to do with something about Scorpio or what, but I don't know. It's something I'm investigating. Anywho, that's a whole nother wormhole. So the princesses, what happens when after we get the prince, which is mind? Well, then we get the material world and the princesses. So the princesses sleep in silent matter, embodiments of the family chatter, elements simple and slow, hiding a secret only they know. Well, now you're going to know. The secret is the redintegration. So remember how I said there's three parts in the tarot where this magical redintegration happens, where it's fully manifested, and so it jumps back into the beginning. So everything in the Thoth deck is a circle. It starts here, and it goes, and it goes, and it goes, and at the very end, it jumps back on top. This happens in the tens of the Thoth deck, and in the princesses of the Thoth deck, and in the universe card. And that's because the universe is wheels within wheels within wheels within wheels. Forever. So that's kind of the vibe, you know? Meta. So the princesses here, they are the full manifestation of, they are like, they sleep in silent matter. So matter as like silent, as like not happening cosmically, it's this moment. And silence is also a secret of the Sphinx. It's one of the riddles of the Sphinx that connects to this card. Embodiments of the family chatter. So these three cards, these two create this, and then this one kind of creates this one. Elements simple and slow, hiding a secret only they know. So when we've reached the full manifestation, what happens is they fall, the idea here, Crowley explains this in his book, they fall in love with the prince. The prince is like their lover, but is actually their higher self, which is your higher self. So the idea is you are falling in love with your higher self, which is your actual true will, which is represented as a prince. We're all represented as princesses because we're sleeping. We got to wake up, you know, we got to get woke. So we're sleeping. The prince awakens us. The prince is our higher self, the true will, what we're meant to do on this in this world. When we meet the prince, the marriage of the princess and the prince sets the princess up in the throne of Bina, which is the queen. So the princess becomes the queen. So what happens is we then, as princesses, meeting our prince, our higher selves, after we meet our higher selves, we are awakened into our power as a queen, which Kabbalistically, this is called crossing the abyss, which is a whole deal and is dangerous. And when we become the queen on the other side, after we cross the abyss, we awaken the eld of the All-Father. And that is the power of the night, which is the impetus before anything for the universe to be created. So it's a lot. But for divinatory purposes, you don't have to go all in that. If you tell that to a client, they will think you're crazy and they will probably never book you again. But that's just for your own knowledge and your own esoteric research. But in terms of a reading, so we have, yeah, knights are the fire of the element, queens are the water, princes are the air, princesses are the earth of the element. Let's continue, shall we? What do we got next? Okay, let me check if we have any questions. By the way, I'm teaching a class on this. I already mentioned that. My memory's not good these days. You know, I repeat myself a lot. It's kind of cool because then I could, like, have ideas, forget them, and have them again, and it feels like the first time. I'm having a class. I'm teaching this in a few weeks. The link is above, and, you know, it's going to be fun. Okay, cool. So let me know if you have any questions. If not, I'm going to keep moving forward into the major arcana. Wait, there's something else here. Oh, yeah. So we have four elements that reign supreme, further divided into 14. Study these, and I'll bet you'll know most of the Thoth Tarot deck. So you know the ideas of the four court cards, you know the four elements, and you know the 10 numbered cards. So that's most of the deck. The only thing left is the major arcana cards. Now, to systematize it all for you in this one class would be impossible, so I'm going to go through each one and just kind of tell you a couple little tidbits about them. In terms of divination, the Thoth deck is similar to the Rider-Waite-Smith deck in the majors. I mean, in a lot of the deck, it's very similar, but the majors are pretty similar. With some changes here and there. Okay, so let's look at this stuff. So, Remember, this guide is available. If you want to go to tarotwithjoe.com, you can download it for free. It'll be sent to your email. If curiosity draws the reader, 22 secrets bring you deeper. If fate would have it that you pulled one of these, you've got yourself one of the major keys. So, on the left, I have the images of the cards, and on the right, I have the meaning of the Hebrew letter, which is associated with the cards, which, if we have time, I'll get into, but we probably won't. We'll see. So the Fool is Pan, everything, the Big Bang, trust, and happening, Harpocrates and Parsifal, the void, the truth, and the all. The all is a reference to the Kabbalion, which is a hermetic-ish text that, whenever you hear people talking about, like, the seven principles of magic, what they're talking about is the Kabbalion, which was the OG book of that, the seven principles of the universe, like mentalism, gender, da-da-da-da-da. But even that, I think, was written by it's not an old book. It's kind of new-ish. I think it was written by someone in the Theosophical Society or something, and it was, like, working with ideas of Hermeticism, but isn't, like, OG Hermeticism. I love, like, finding the debunks in all this stuff, you know? It's fun. It doesn't mean it's any less effective. It's a beautiful book. Changed my life. Oh, my God. Kabbalion? Great stuff. Okay. The Magus. The Magus has wisdom, alacrity, craft, cunning, and deceit. So the Magus, yeah, similar ideas as RWS. We have attention, consciousness, ability, but also trickery. The magic is language itself. Also, anytime you hear Crowley talk about the Logos, the Word, the Will, those three ideas are the Magus, which is also the second Sephira on the Tree of Life. But don't worry if you don't play with the Tree of Life yet. You can later, or you don't have to. But yeah, Word, Logos, Will, it's all talking about the intention of the universe. Anthropomorphized by Thoth, or Tehuti, or Hermes, the messenger of the god. The god, the archetype that brings us the message of the divine, which is a word. Oh, and I love this one. So, you know when people say word, you know, like slang, like, oh, word. Well, what they're saying, or when they're saying, like, bet, if you ever hear someone say bet, like, oh, yeah, that's right, or I agree, bet. Bet is the Hebrew letter for the magician card or the magus card, which is the word. So when people are saying bet, they're also saying word, and they're specifically saying word of God. Because bet was the first letter in the Torah in the word bereshit, in the beginning. That's a Joe original, okay? It's copyrighted, all right? I didn't read that from nowhere. Okay, so the priestess influences with pure grace, fluctuation, and a change of pace. Yeah, Priestess is a beautiful card. She's talking about connections to the higher self, divinity, but there is a dangerous chance of getting moonstruck. So she's, like, very high spirituality, and grace and connection and all good things, and secrets too, you know. And her symbol is the camel. It's the path of the abyss that we mentioned before. The Empress is the mother, the door of love to one another. The Emperor is government. Also self-uncovering. So the self-uncovering idea is a little bit more of a Joe original, not a pure Crowley, but I feel like the Emperor kind of, like, he constitutes himself, his mind, and yeah, he's like self-constitution, self-possession, but yeah. It could also be war and conquest and all that good stuff. The Hierophant explains, provides the spiritual teachings, this very guide. My life path number is the Hierophant. Love the Hierophant. Hierophant is a little bit different. So again, anytime you see Christian symbolism in RWS, you're going to see probably Thelemic symbolism in the Thoth deck. So what's happening in the... let me see if I can find it, because it's actually pretty fun. It's good to know. So in the Hierophant card, what's happening is... we have Osiris up in here, and then we have Nuit down here. Not Nuit, but Isis. Isis, Osiris, and then Horus in the middle. So remember I talked to you about those three aeons? Well, it kind of goes like this. So we have the aeon of Isis below, where human culture was female-centric, because it was all about the woman, because women give birth, which is the biggest miracle in the world. Thanks, guys. And then we have the Hierophant up here, which is Osiris, that represents the kind of the second aeon, which is the aeon of Osiris, patriarchal culture, which we're shifting out of, thank God, thank goddess. And then we have Horus in the middle, which is the symbol of the aeon we're in now. So it's like a whole initiation of Horus to kind of come up and take the stance of where Osiris is. Just some fun stuff there. I guess I should mention that in terms of the Egyptian connection with Thoth, yes, there's an Egyptian connection, but only through Crowley's lens. So don't, like, read the Book of Thoth and, like, you know, like, I imagine, what's the word? Like, Egyptologists, academics, like, I don't know how much that's actually going to align with the Thoth deck. Though Crowley thought he, you know, claims that he was connecting to these Egyptian deities. It's again, it's through his lens. Okay, so the Lovers represents creation by division and relation. So the Lovers is the dividing aspect of the universe. So this could be possibilities, choices, also frivolity, thought. Could be love, too. Chariot triumphs with hope and victory, authority under authority. So the Chariot is actually the Holy Grail. You know, I'm just going to show you the cards as I go through this stuff because this sheet is so small. So I'm looking at the we're looking at the Chariot card. So the meaning authority under authority is really beautiful, and it has to do with where it is on the Tree of Life and emanation theory. So the idea that the body is just a vehicle for the soul is a big thing with the Chariot. The Chariot is also the Holy Grail, and you know, I'm searching. I'm gonna find it. Okay. Moving forward, we have adjustment. Adjustments, karma, always wins. Ma'at balances with a grin. So this is the Newtonian universe. Sir Isaac Newton, the physicist, you know, everything has a cause and an effect, reaction, action and reaction. That's kind of what Ma'at is talking about. Crowley beautifully says, like, you cannot drop a pin without it affecting every star. That's so beautiful. Now, that could be a lie, because actually there, I have consulted a physicist about some of the things that Crowley says, and a particle physicist, one of the smartest people I know, and he actually told me how it's not quite the way Crowley sees the world. It doesn't make it any less valuable to read about, because again, when we're working with tarot, what are we doing? We're working in the realm of Yetzirah, which is the realm of the mind. So it does make sense in the mind and how the mind works and consciousness works, though it might not make sense how the material universe works. But yeah, so this is talking about things knocking into each other, cause and effect, justice, all that good stuff. The Hermit. Do I have the Hermit here? The Hermit illuminates within, retiring from Samsara's spin. That's a hint at the next card. So what do we got? We have Samsara in this card, Hermit in this card. Hermit is the individual connecting to itself. Hermit is also the father figure. As God, like the Yod, that's his Hebrew letter, which is means hand, which is like the hand of God. But it's going within, it's coming within. It's also talking, it has connections to Mercury and psychopompic deities because he's traveling into the underworld. So we have Virgo, which is the crust of the earth, and he's also the word, the will, the logos, which is connection to the Magus card. So what happens in the Hermit is the intention of the universe, the will of the universe, going into manifestation, going into Hades, which is represented by Virgo. I love Virgos, by the way. They're the best. I love them. Earth signs rule. Okay, so, but that's a whole other thing. But yeah, isolation, retirement, spiritual quest, good stuff like that. Fortune, favors, grasping hands, grab the boon, changes soon. So the fortune card is the material universe in flux. It is chance, it is possibility, it is change, generally good change. All that. And we have, if you you know what, here's a fun thing, go read the Bhagavad Gita and use this card as a bookmark. It's a good ride. That's a Joe original. Okay, so because these three represent the three gunas that the Bhagavad Gita is talking about. The Lust card, one of my favorites. Lust is magic, strength and action, your true will is always sanctioned. So Lust card is talking about the true will, ecstasy, the ecstasy of exercising your superpowers. So whereas Rider-Waite-Smith, so here's the fun part. Excuse me. Whew. From the surface, the Rider-Waite-Smith strength card is looking like it's like holding in desire, whereas the Lust card in the Thoth deck looks like she's, you know, giving herself up to desire. Yes, on the surface, but when you like deeply look at it, they're both the same thing. Like on the other side, it's kind of like more... It's actually, they're similar ideas. And I believe it has to do with harnessing the creative energy, which is also the Kundalini force, the serpent power, as occultists like to describe it, which is a path of mysticism. But in general, it means doing what you love. Simple. This is Babylon, by the way. Remember I told you about that badass woman who was having a party, a great time at the in the apocalypse of the Bible? Well, here's her doing her thing, having a great grand old time, drinking from the blood of the saints, you know, getting her life. Yes, it's a great card. Love Babylon. Also, Shakti, I feel like, is like a, would be maybe a tantric equivalent in some ways. The Hanged Man. Okay. The Hanged Man shows his sacrifice to see the world through spiritual eyes. So the Hanged Man is talking about enforced sacrifice. Crowley didn't love the Hanged Man. Why? It's because the Hanged Man is water, and water doesn't get along with the new Aeon as much. Crowley was also hard on the Suit of Cups. He didn't like vibe as much with the Suit of Cups because of this Aeon of Fire that we're supposedly in. it doesn't mean you can't vibe with the Suit of Cups. I love the Suit of Cups. The ability to receive, you know? Okay, let's keep this party going. The Death card. Death is only an illusion, a dance, and we are all included. So this is Osiris doing a dance because Osiris is a slain god, just like Jesus and some other fun ones. We have a lot of symbolism here, but it's just the dance of life and death happening together. Life and death is just two sides of the same snake, you know, two layers of the same snake. And speaking of snakes, we do have a snake here because snake is sacred to Scorpio. this is a Scorpio card, but you can see these, like, people, they're dancing all the way up. They're having a good time. So yeah, could it mean death? Why not? But it's more like the dance of death and life and transformation and all that. Art combines unlikely things, alchemical entangling. So this is where we get one of the biggest occult secrets ever, and I'm about to give you that occult secret right now. Are you ready for it? So this one took me so long to discover, so many hours. The secret here, which is the secret to sex magic and tantra, is the white gluten and the red blood, and those are symbols of cream cheese and hot sauce. I know it's crazy, but I tried it once. I don't know what I ordered. It was the best combination. Cream cheese and hot sauce, so good. So now you know the great secret. You don't even have to go any further. All right, but let's keep going further. the Devil card. We have, what do we got going on? The Devil has an ambitious claim, blind impulse, and the material gain. By the way, what I'm reading from is my free Thoth guide. You can find it on my website at tarotwithjoe.com. It's totally free. And it's fun. I just finished it today. Okay, so the Devil card is the Devil has an ambitious claim, blind impulse, and material gain. So this is also Pan. So the Fool is Pan, and then the Devil is Pan. The Fool is unmanifest Pan. The Devil is manifest Pan. Oh my God! If you want to learn this stuff like through a comic book, you like comics, you like visuals. Oh my God! Get Promethea. One of the best things I ever read. Like there's a part in the. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because there's a whole spread where they reach, like, the top of emanation. They reach, like, this source of God in the universe, and there's this beautiful image of Pan, and it's so good. That comic book has given me a lot of insight into mystical experiences that I could not have explained otherwise, but it's a good one. Okay, so the material universe, Capricorn energy, Capricorn sun. But yeah, it's blind impulse, it could be lust, it could be attachment, but anything that is the material universe, generation, good or for bad, whatever. So we're looking at the Tower. The Tower causes sudden loss. Off our fortress, we are tossed. Crowley talks about Mars as the material universe a lot. So he's talking a lot about like change and loss and violence of the material worlds in the Tower card. But there, I'm going to give you two little secrets here. We have a dove right here, and we have a serpent right here. I'm not going to tell you what those mean because I don't want to say everything. I want to give little foreshadowing things. If you want to find out, take my course. It's coming up, link above. But yeah, the dove and the serpent are beautiful symbols. You'll read them in the Book of the Law and some other things. Okay, the star. Oh my God. Speaking of the Book of the Law, if you want to read about her, read chapter one. It's so beautiful. First time I read it, it made me cry. Okay, so the star is hope, a clear vision, infinite space, and a secret mission. So the star is Nuit or Nuit, which is one of his major deities. It's one of his big three. You got Nuit, Hadit, and Rahorquit. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but that's how I pronounce it. Or sometimes I say Nuit. So she's infinite space, potential. She is vision, hope, rejuvenation, and lots of other stuff. Aquarius energy. Yeah, it's a very deep card. But in terms of a divination, yeah, new vision, hope. The self, the humanity. This is our cherubic angel, or our cherubic man, if you like to work with Ezekiel symbolism. What else we got? We got the moon. The moon deceives with his hysteria. The dark night of the soul is in everyone. So the moon is the dark night of the soul. It's like things getting weird, wonky, the unconscious, Anubis. These are like brain waves. Yeah, it's a weird card. So we have, the moon shows up a few times in the tarot. Well, a lot of times, like a lot, but the two big times it shows up is in the moon card and the priestess. So the priestess is like the higher moon, spirituality. And then the moon card is like the lower moon, the unconsciousness, the weird forces. Yeah, this is going through something you've never gone through before, unfamiliarity, fear. And yeah, it's good stuff. Okay, moving forward. Yep, I gotta wrap up soon. The sun is glory, gaining riches, Heru Raha's powerful conditions. So Heru Raha is one of the big three in Crowley's system. It's the union of Nuit and Hadit. They come together to create Horus, which is also known as Heru Raha. That's like his stage name, you know what I mean? So Heru Raha is chilling here in his two forms. One is called Harpocrates, and the other is called Rahorquit. And they are just two forms of Horus. One is like vengeful and action-oriented, and one is silent. And the silent one gets his inspiration, I believe, from the Greek god Harpocrates. So like when you see that kind of stuff in like occultism and magic, when people do that, they're mentioning Harpocrates. Yeah, the sun card, vitality, winning, riches, freedom. Freedom's a big one in the sun card. Yeah, lots of good stuff. We got the whole zodiac involved. Okay, the Aeon card. So this is the biggest difference between Ardabes and Thoth. So whereas Ardabes is like picturing like the last judgment, and it has so much symbolism in that card. It's beautiful. Talks about like going out of 3D into 4D. I don't know why everyone's talking about 5D, like everywhere. We're still in 3D, at least from my knowledge. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think we're still in 3D. I don't think time is the 4D. I don't know. But in the judgment card of Ardabes, it's 3D going into 4D, going into reabsorption with the universe. Anywho, in Thoth deck, what's happening is kind of a similar idea, but we're looking at remember the big three I was talking about? Well, we have Horus, we have Hadit, which is this red dot, and then we have Nuit, which is the sky. So we have the infinite point of consciousness, which exists in all of us as a unit of consciousness, but here symbolized on the grandest scale by Hadith. And then we have Nuit, which is infinite space, infinite potentiality. And they come together to create none other than Horus, a.k.a. Heru Raha. And he is the leader of this new Aeon. And here we are as little souls in this Hebrew letter Shin, because Shin or Sheen is the Hebrew letter sacred to this card. And we are rising up into the new Aeon. Lots of good stuff here. But this is actually a illustration or a version of the stele that Crowley found to start his religion, the Lema. Okay, in readings, this is a choice that you cannot go back on. So what do I see in this card in a reading? It's kind of like the singularity. Like you make the choice, you can't go back. Everything is changed for the good, but it requires some level of sacrifice. I mean, this is baptism by fire we're talking about, you know? Something's going to get burned, but divinely burned, let's say. I like fire. I spin fire sometimes. Okay, so the Aeon card is not looking back, moving forward. And also, it's like, I kind of see it as like divine spaghettification. So there's this idea in physics where if you like get close enough to a black hole, you will spaghettify. Your body will stretch literally like miles because of the gravity is so strong. Like there's no going back there. So this is like a singularity in a person's life. It's a really deep card. I love when it shows up. Okay, what else we got? The universe card. Let me just make sure that's not this. Okay, no, that's not regarding me. Okay, I just want to make sure that the message was not regarding this class. Okay, cool. So we got the universe card. Universe card is... let me read the Aeon card. The Aeon is your final choice. Ascend to Horus and rejoice. The universe card. Oh, this is like the best one. This is so good. The universe is the grand finale, fulfilled, endorsed, a final tally. If you can climb a sacred snake, a brand new universe you will make. So there's so much we can talk about with this card. Generally, it has to do with reabsorption back into the whole, or like the final manifestation of something. So divination-wise, it's the full completion of something, full fulfillment. It's totally done. It's like you're moving forward, and it's big success. Mystically, this can be heat death of the universe coming back into itself for a big bang, or it could be the end of your life going into a new life. But what's happening here is, remember before how I told you about the court cards, they revolve around a wheel. And when we get to the princesses of the court cards, it's like the very end of the cycle. And what happens with the princesses? They meet the princes, which is our higher self. We fall in love with our higher self. We become the queens. And then we awaken the knights, which are the fathers. It's like this endless cycle. Well, that's kind of what's starting to happen here. And you'll notice she's stepping on the snake. Now, stepping on the snake, this symbol, I've seen it in Crowley. I've seen it in A Little Golden Dawn. And I've also think I've seen it in like Hebrew Kabbalah. And from my understanding, this is when we kind of step on, so to speak, our, I want to say like lower nature or our DNA, or we, it's kind of like we're stepping on our, what we thought we were, and seeing what we really are. And by the way, the snake, oh, this is a fun, I gotta drop this one, this is so good. The snake in the Bible or in the Torah, the name of the snake that tempts Eve is Nahash. I call him Nachasha, because my friend calls him Nachasha, so that's what we call him. It's a cool name. So Nachasha, his number, when you calculate it with Gematria, his secret number is 418, I believe. And the secret number of the word Messiah is also 418. Whoa. Okay, so we have the sacred snake, which is evolution, and the expansion of humanity to this very moment. And we are in some ways stepping on that evolution and going beyond it, beyond physical evolution, beyond our creation myth to something even higher.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Joe Monteleone. You can find more and download the free guide at tarotmysticismacademy.com. You can also reach me at joe@tarotwithjoe.com and my YouTube, youtube.com/Joe Monteleone. I look forward to continuing our tour of the teleology of tarot, and I will see you in another wormhole. Much love.